Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, brought to you by the Wealthy Speaker School. This is the podcast dedicated to people who want to speak more as a way to build their income and grow their business. Hey, welcome everyone. This is the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, and I'm your host, Jane Atkinson. Today, we are talking about how to overcome obstacles in the speaking business, and our guest expert is the one and only Alvin Law. Welcome, Alvin.
Hey, how you doing? And by the way, I know this is going to date this interview, but Merry Christmas from Calgary.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a snowstorm in your backyard right now. And let's just say it is September when we're recording this. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that's crazy. And snow is definitely something that's a part of your whole, you know, we're talking about overcoming obstacles today. But there's something kind of important that we need to lay out of the on the table. You and I have worked together a few years ago, and I'm excited to catch up with you and where your speaking business is today. But let's start at the beginning when you were born, because I know normally we don't go that far back, but in this case, it's very relevant.
Yeah, that's a long way back, Jane. You're right. I actually have a line in my talks, not to get right into speaker mode here, but that is that I was labeled right from day one of my life in July of 1960, because I was one of the what would become infamous thalidomide babies. And for people that just went, what? Thalidomide was the morning sickness medication, which, by the way, was never meant to treat pregnant women, but we didn't know better in 1960. Right. And I was born without arms. But I think the most powerful part of my story, and I don't do it to be melodramatic, although I'm pretty melodramatic on stage, is I was homeless when I was 5 days old. So, you know, you hate to kind of create this idea of, oh my God, but oh my God, really, that's how it began. My birth family, simply, they weren't bad people. I can talk about them in a bit, but they were simply overwhelmed. And I think the most important thing to state when I joke about when it was is when it was 1960. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know what we know now in 2019, say, about people, let's just say special needs. Mm-hmm. In fact, the irony of that was I believe in so many woo-woo things. You know that.
Yes.
I was not only meant to be born this way, but meant to be given up so I could land in the home of a place that gave me every belief that I have to this day, minus the few that I've learned in the last 25 years.
What's your mom's name?
Hilda Law.
Hilda Law adopted you and said, you are my son. And when you were born without arms, what did she say? I mean, how did she baby you? What did she do? I mean, there's some really amazing things that Hilda did.
Well, and just to back up for 1 second, Jane, she did not adopt me. She took me home as a foster baby. Oh. Because my mom, and this is so key to the story, especially for some of your listeners. Mm-hmm. My mom was 55 years old. And while we're at it, we got to put Jack in there too. Jack Law, her husband, was 53 mm-hmm. years old.
Wow.
They were married in 1930. So by 1960, you know, do the math. They've been married mm-hmm. 30 years. Their sons, John and Terry. I have a brother, John, who's 87 years old. I mean, can you believe that?
No, I can't.
They had empty bedrooms.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Jane. When I have an empty bedroom, I usually make an office out of
a
it.
A gym. Or... yeah, exactly.
They took in foster kids.
Oh,
and they
wow.
didn't take them for long. They were always temporary stays because that was the clear, you know, rules. We weren't keeping anybody. We're 55.
Right.
But when I came to live there for a couple of weeks, they were never able to farm me out to anybody, but I also spent, and this is going to sound real nice, so be ready. But mom said, we just fell in love with this little baby, and we just decided we needed another thing to do in our late 50s, and that's what they did. They took that wealth of knowledge, that wisdom, and gave me so many gifts. But no, they never babied me. I mean, at first there was love, there was cuddling, there was attention, there was something that I think we really could talk about a lot, because it seems in 2019 as well, there's so much more information coming out about PTSD relating to childhood trauma. And not to get heavy on you, but I think those are things that are relevant to my life, because
sure.
when I look at it, I don't know what my life would have been like with my birth family, but they were very poor farmers. They lived in rural Saskatchewan. They didn't have power or running water. Now, maybe I would have turned out the same. Who knows? All I know is this is how I turned out because of the path of my life.
So when she was giving you, like, talk about just some of the early things that allowed you to start saying, hey, wait a second. Okay, he doesn't have any arms. Let's use his feet.
Well, you know, it's interesting because my mom actually did a press interview in December of 1961. She didn't do it because she wanted to talk to the press. If you knew my mom, she hated that.
Yeah.
But in her mind, there was so much misinformation that was in her mind because, you see, she was going to tons of clinics. Just real quick, Jane, my mom agreed when she took me home and then to keep me with my dad that they would use me not as a guinea pig's too strong a word, but my memories of it were not that far off that idea. Okay. I went to so many clinics. I went to 90 clinics before I was 6 years old. And it was all across Canada. And they were using me as, oh, this is one of those thalidomide babies. See what went wrong? And my mom kept going, okay, wait, I'm not a doctor, so you're intimidating me, Bile. But if you just listen, there's nothing wrong with him. You're focusing on the wrong thing.
Right.
Which, by the way, in the bigger picture, Jane, is what people tend to do all the time, is instead of focusing on not just being positive, but trying to understand why obstacles come into our life. They happen to everybody. Why does everybody think they're the only one that has obstacles? They're just relative. So my mom and dad, remember 1930, they went through the Depression. My dad was a World War II veteran. He fought in World War II for 4 years. So no arms, that's no big deal. And it's a very interesting mindset.
Wow. So they had this idea of let's focus on the good stuff. And, you know, for our listeners, I think that's something that we should just lay out as a piece of homework is, okay, you've got an obstacle. What can you see about this obstacle that could be more positive? And so you began to figure out, the first time I ever saw you, and I don't know if you'll remember this, but I think we were in New Orleans in this hotel. It must have been years ago because you were smoking a cigarette with your toes, my friend. And I'm like, who is that guy smoking a cigarette with his toes? Now, I know you don't smoke, but I think that was just a funny introduction to you.
Well, and I probably had a pretty stiff cocktail in the other foot too, didn't I? And if you remember, Jane, if I could add one more thing, I don't want to give any shining light to anybody else who's not in this podcast, but do you remember Warren McDonald and I were together?
Right.
And for your audience who doesn't know this, Warren happens to have no legs because of a mountain climbing accident. I mean, audience, just picture that visual of Warren, no arms, no legs, me smoking and drinking and having a party in New Orleans. And people are kind of going, wait, that's a weird picture. What's going on with that?
And you were both my clients, and we joked that I charged my clients an arm and a leg.
Or at least a half-price discount.
There you go. Yeah, Warren is amazing as well. He'll be on the show here soon, too. Well,
but that gives you an example of what your first impression was. I would love to hear that.
Well, I just thought, wow, you know, there's a guy smoking a cigarette with his toes. And I remember a few years later when I introduced you to my husband, you wanted to show him some pictures. And so we're sitting on tall bar stools and you hop up on this tall bar stool and you whip out your iPad and you start flipping through with your toes, showing my husband pictures. And he's told people the story of this forever. But when it comes to speaking, okay, let's now go to your speaking career. That's been, did you say 38 years?
38 years. Yeah. It was 81. I started. Now there was a little gap in there, not to get technical here, but let's just say this bluntly, Jane, the idea that anybody could make a living out of speaking was the most insane thing I'd ever thought of in my entire life. So it was 85 that I jumped ship with my work. I was actually not doing training, but I was doing speaking for a nonprofit agency in Saskatchewan that looked after adults with intellectual disabilities. And I was working in their community relations department. But by 1985, I'd already done 700 speeches.
Wow. So you were you were the road warrior before you even began, but then you decided.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it, exactly, road warrior. I drove all over the province of Saskatchewan because I was And also, it's very important to state this, Jane, so your audience understands. I was also a celebrity at that time because I was doing telethons starting in 1975 because of another talent that I have that we can talk about. But I remember this extremely well, that I was taken to task by a lot of activists in the field of disability who thought I was nothing more than a circus sideshow. Hmm. And they didn't fully understand what I was up to. Maybe sometimes I overacted. Maybe sometimes I was a little bit dramatic on television. But the point was not to say, look at me, look at me, look at me. The point was to say to audiences, what exactly are you seeing? And I meant that as a blanket statement about all people that we call theoretically different, which I just find this fascinating because, you know, my mom always used to say, he was born normal.
Yeah. He was born normal, and you are. I mean, we've actually traveled together, and one of the things about the speaking industry is it requires a lot of travel. So you hop in your truck that has been, I'm assuming, somehow custom fit for you. How do you do that?
No. In fact, I drive with my right foot on the steering wheel and my left foot on the gas. And what was really funny, not to make any big deal out of this, but yesterday was a fascinating day because I drove 2 hours from Southern Missouri to St. Louis in my rental car, which is not specially outfitted, to fly to Calgary and get in. I didn't get home till 1 a.m. this morning in a snowstorm, driving my SUV from the airport 40 minutes and not a problem. But that, again, goes to mindset.
Yeah.
And I think you need to hear this, Jane. I didn't ask to give me a special license.
Right.
My dad in particular, he was the tough guy. Mom was the loving guy. It was like a bad cop, good cop thing.
Yeah.
And dad was insistent. If I get my license, I need to get it the legal, proper way. And that's another mindset. I've never, and this is, by the way, this is not meant to sound derogatory. I've never asked for anything special in my life. Mm. But I can't lie. Being handicapped, if you play your cards right, can bring you some pretty good perks. Because society is more than willing to give you a break now and then. But
right.
Here's the key, and I think this actually fits into our program. It's how you portray your energy.
Right. So you show up at the airport completely ready and willing to be like everybody else. And I know for a fact that you fling your bag over your shoulder and that's your carry-on. And that when you go to security, you're like everybody else. And but when you're taking off your jacket and your belt and what have you, you're doing it with your feet. And do they ever cut you a break because of that?
I think that there is a sense that I get, and by the way, that was funny when you said belt. I've never worn a belt. In fact, you know, while we're on the topic, I think that's another interesting thing. I'm not getting away from what you asked me, but I think it's because I had to adapt, and it was really, 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 really hard that gratitude became part of my everyday existence. Now, I'm not going to lie about this. There are days when I get to the airport, I'm going, oh, geez, I got to go on another plane. I got to go to another hotel. Not every day is all, you know, nicely smelling flowers. But I also recognize, and by the way, my wife, Darlene, who you know very well, comes into this too. She has, I think, become a real idealistic example of the expression, it is what it is. It's become almost a jaded expression in our society, but that's what she reminds me of every time that I go. But here's the funniest one. She also says, honey, if you get tired of speaking, I'm sure there's a windowless cubicle in a boring office building in the middle of city of Calgary that you can commute to every day for 5 days a week and bang your head against a concrete wall. And I go, yeah, okay, I'm good.
Yeah, here we go.
In perspective, I'm so lucky to be able to travel. Would I prefer to stay home? I mean, of course, I love being home.
But when we talk about road warrior, when we talk about road warriors, I mean, you really truly have been. So you first started your business in the schools.
Yes.
And talk about this, when you go into education, everybody, know that the schools means a lot of work. So you might go to a city and do how many engagements in one day?
Well, that was the old model, and that was why I think it's, I'm glad you brought this up, because honestly, in my mindset in 1981, just to back up one half a step, I was a DJ. I was a rock DJ in Regina, Saskatchewan, an FM radio station, and I was good at it. I had this great voice, and I was able to get out there and do my thing. And I just want to make a reference to Terry Brock because I love Terry Brock. Terry Brock has one of the greatest
radio voice. Yeah.
speaking. But when you see Terry, it doesn't quite match the image, does it? Because he's a smaller guy, and I'm not making fun of Terry, but the big voice coming out of a smaller frame, that was me. And I realized that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a DJ, but I kept getting invited to these public things.
Right.
And they would want to hear a story. So yeah, I would tell a funny story about traveling, or I would tell a funny story about driving, right? Tell a funny story about eating. And that just kind of brought me out into the public. So when 1981 came, that's why 38 years, it was the International Year of Disabled Persons. So I simply had an opportunity through another individual I knew who we've lost a few years ago, but he happened to have cerebral palsy. Now, this is a very important story to tell in this podcast, Jane, because you could barely understand the guy. Yet he was a motivational speaker.
Right.
And you know what he did? I'm going to do this on purpose. So is your audience and you ready?
Yes.
He talked like this. And the audience would be leaning forward in their chairs going, come on, buddy, speed up. But what he taught audiences without even saying it was we need to be more aware of not only people's differences, mm-hmm. but we need to respect the fact that if you're up there trying your best, what more can you ask than that? So Lee encouraged me to quit radio to work for the International Year of Disabled Persons. Literally, we were sanctioned by the United Nations, believe it or not. And that was the first year of speaking across Alberta. But then I moved to Saskatchewan. So for 4 years after that, to 85, I was strictly going out to the community to speak to schools mostly, but also to community events. But that's that 700 talks I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I would do 5 talks a day.
5 talks a day. I want everybody to hear this. Having traveled with you, just knowing what 5 talks a day looks like and then hopping on a plane again.
Well, I was driving around Saskatchewan.
Oh, that was before. But really,
by the way,
you've still been doing that in the last however many years road warrior.
Yeah, but I'm glad you brought that up because it did eventually lead to traveling by plane.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually the biggest, there was 2 or 3 big ones in my life. And I'm sure everybody that is listening can relate. There's always one. And by the way, I did not see it coming. But in 1985, my hometown of Yorkton, Saskatchewan, population 15,000 people, hosted the first ever Canadian Student Leadership Convention. Mm. And it was a huge success. 800 students from all over North America came. And guess who they heard speak for the first time?
Alvin Law.
Right. So because I was from Yorkton, I was brought home as the good old boy.
Right.
But I learned something so valuable, and this is valuable for your audience, that what I was teaching about disability awareness was simply just a change of language away from leadership.
Right.
So the leadership component kicked in. And before I knew it, I had the opportunity to travel across the country. In fact, swear to God, the first school I spoke at after that engagement in Yorkton in October of 1985 was 5 days, 10 schools in London, Ontario.
Oh, my goodness.
And the first
That's
school
my
I spoke
hometown.
At, I know, the first school I spoke at was Beale Secondary.
Yeah.
So that'll give you an example of how my life all of a sudden switched gears. And I didn't expect it. It actually switched gears so much that I eventually quit my advertising job, which I acquired because I decided to do something. I had a kid. Yeah, long story, Jane. But mm-hmm. I decided to try advertising, and I loved it. But this speaking kept nagging at me. It does. It nags at you, doesn't it? And either you pay attention and do what you got to do, or you give it a try, and if it doesn't work, you go on to something else. I mean, really, let's be honest about this. Not everybody is going to succeed in this business, mostly because it's really hard work.
Mm, it really is a lot of hard work. And sometimes, part of the reason why I really wanted to have you on the show is so that the next time you're standing there waiting in the lineup to get through security for the third time this week, I want Alvin's voice to be in your head to say, okay, perspective, people. Yes. This is a pain in the butt. We do this so that we're secure and it's not comfortable or convenient, but we do it. And it is part of the job. It's part of the job. So you have gone 38 years and you have evolved from, that was part of our work together, from
yes.
schools into corporate work. So now yes. we've got leadership that happened in that beautiful day when your student conference was there. And then, but now you've actually evolved into the corporate work. And don't you find... Talk about the first time that you felt like, ooh, I've made it. I'm in the bigs. I'm at the show. Like, they pick you up and all that kind of thing. Talk about the first time that happened.
So I was flailing away, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, because let's be blunt about this, too. If you're going to be an educational speaker, you better be prepared to be eaten at Subway, because it doesn't make a lot of money.
Right.
And I was kind of trolling around trying to figure out what I was going to do with this. But there was a key connection or a linkage to what happened is the schools led to teachers inviting me to speak at conferences.
Right.
The teachers' conferences put me in front of meeting planners. Meeting planners then linked me to the other adults in the room. And those were others, and I mean that colloquially, that were doing events that were associations.
Right.
So I didn't launch into... corporate in the sense that I was working for the big 500. I was more doing big associations who have budgets for mostly it was national conventions. And they had never heard of Alvin Law. I mean, I was famous in Saskatchewan. That's easy, by the way. But they they started bringing me to Toronto, for example, or Vancouver.
Right.
But here was the key. I started going to events where they had to have events. So financial planners, medical associations, any organization that has to have an annual event for educational credits had to have events. And I mean this with incredible respect. You ever been to one of those educational credit sessions? I mean, really? So they always wanted to have a speaker to come in and not only entertain a little bit,
right,
but to inspire. And my story wrote itself. So
yep.
all I had to learn, and this is what you helped me with, and I'm not going to be shy about this, was learning how to be more professional on and off stage, to bank up your ladder a little bit, to climb to a higher rung, as Tony Newman would say, and see a different picture of the world. Because when I started to recognize that, you know, you asked me a question about leadership, how that changed and morphed from kids to adults. Mm-hmm. It was actually the same thing. It morphed from educational experts, teachers, to corporate leaders. And then I realized this was probably, you're right, the big one that got me was when I spoke to a five-day tour across the country for one of the financial planning organizations that sponsored me. I mean, I remember it exactly. They had hired the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto for the event. Mm-hmm. And I'm wandering around the Hockey Hall of Fame and nobody's there but the client. And I'm going, Alvin, this is cool, buddy.
Yeah, you made it.
Yeah.
You made it.
And that
what
was 95.
Awesome. Milestone. And I know you've traveled around the world. You and Darlene have had some really amazing trips, all with speaking attached at the other end. Like, that is a beautiful life.
It is. Yeah. And my highlight, just to give people a sense of what they can actually accomplish, is my highlight reel completely was full of all kinds. But my favorite one was when I spoke to 2,500 CEOs for YPO in Singapore, and the likes of Eduardo Saverin from Facebook, is Sylvia Earle. I saw Sir David Attenborough get his boat launched this week. He was there. I hung out and had a coffee with Sir Richard and David Attenborough because both were there, the dad and the son. And I'm looking across the table going, you're from Yorkton, Saskatchewan. How the heck did this happen?
How did you get here? That's really, really awesome. Now, some of the things, you know, you surprised me by smoking a cigarette, but that's not where you draw the line at with your audience, certainly not the students. And let's be clear that Alvin is not a smoker. But I think it was just the New Orleans air that kind of brought
out
that
in you. It was the New Orleans air.
So... but when you are on stage, you do some things that surprise people. And one of the things we worked towards, and I want to share this with people because I think it's an important lesson for all speakers. You play the drums, you play the piano, you have some really great funny stories about your piano teacher. What did she say to you? What's the funny?
Well, the drums thing is, we'll get to that in a minute, but I was not athletic. Duh. I mean, my oldest jokes are about, while we're on the topic, you got to have a sense of humor. Otherwise, end up in the nut house. I always have the best line ever. I could play soccer. And by the way, it's called football, just while we're clear on that. Yeah. I could play soccer with the best of them. And I had the benefit of never getting the penalty for touching the ball with my hands.
Okay.
Ha, ha, ha. It was a throwaway line. But in fact, it was a very profound line. Because when I entered my sort of, era when we all grow, 10, 11, 12 years old, I wanted to do stuff.
Right.
And I couldn't play sports, so I wanted to play music. And we didn't have any musical instruments, so I tried piano, just plunking away, chopsticks, I think. Mom heard me and thought, hey, took me to a lady who taught lessons, and essentially she was the opposite of what my mom was. So instead of looking at it going, hey, we can figure this out, she went, that's ridiculous. You look how short your toes are. And that sounds funny, but the reality is I have short toes.
Right.
So how was I going to play the piano for real? That was her mindset.
Right.
So that challenged mine. And I think this is a really good question, Jane, because this is what happens in people's lives. They're led to believe something, they go with it for a while, and then conventional wisdom comes along and throws a wrench into the idea. So they start to question everything they've ever believed, trying to reinvent themselves, which is fine. But at the same time, we just have to, and this is exactly the line. What I recognized was I just needed another opinion.
Right.
Not so they could agree with me, but so they could have the same mindset. So my favorite story that I own, period, and I'll give you the brief version, is when a band director in Yorkton, Saskatchewan, mounted a trombone on the side of a chair that I played with my right foot that I got into band. And when I got into band, that made me feel included. You know, in 2019, we love to throw around the word inclusivity in our society, diversity.
Yes.
Well, you know what? The real story in Yorkton, Saskatchewan is nobody wanted to play the trombone. So I put my foot in the air and went, I'll do it. But they had to come up with a device. But the device was not the key. The enrichment to my life was everything. Mm-hmm. So hanging out with musicians, I started playing the drums. And then eventually I went back and started playing the piano, almost as if to give my middle toe to the lady that said my toes were too short.
And that's always a really good line, because I think everybody's like, yeah, take it, nasty piano
you
teacher.
Bet. You bet.
But then you also play the drums during your presentations. And one of the things I said to you a long time ago was, look, you're going to get a standing ovation just because you do those things. You're going to get it no matter what. And we talked about how you could flip it around and make it more about them.
Absolutely.
Because we want you to earn that standing O. And that's when I think you really earn it. Like, if you've done something amazing and people stand for you every time, I challenge you to say, no, that is not enough. How can I take my situation and apply it to you? Okay, you weren't born without arms. However, I bet you've had an obstacle before. I bet you've had a nasty piano teacher before. And you figured out a way to make it about them, Alvin. And that's really when I think for you, hurdle-wise in terms of fees, then things started to change then as well.
Yeah, and you know this very well, Jane, because you and I have talked about this more times than I could calculate. It's so simple, doesn't it seem on paper? You just change it from me language to you language. It's subtle, but it is exactly that. And you're very, I'm glad you brought that up, because honestly, I still think about it when I get up on stage and play. I don't play the whole drum set on the show, just so people can be accurate, because there's a subtle difference, frankly. And most people would not pick up on this. I've actually had clients bring in an entire drum set.
Right.
But then I get rid of the set and I just play a snare drum.
Right.
There's actually another little symbolic thing going on that I use in my talks. And this is all part of stagecraft as well. Mm-hmm. But the drum thing is meant to be this idea of how many times have you been all by yourself practicing your craft, trying to find out if anyone's ever going to notice you. And then you finally just say, no one's ever going to get this. I'm just going to quit. So I use it symbolically to say, I just kept banging away and banging away and banging away. And before you know it, you have crossed that line into understanding that you've done the work to get you what you deserve to be paid. And I believe that is extremely important. Yeah, you nailed it. In fact, my wife, as you again referenced, Darlene, people need to know, she's also my business manager. She takes right. care of business. But what she's also is a very astute critic. You know, when I wrote my first book, and by the way, I am writing the next one, it's happening. When I wrote my first book, it was 900 pages of manuscript. And Darlene read it over a weekend. This was back in 2006. And she came back on a Monday and said, I wouldn't buy this if it was free.
Harsh.
Now, did my stories change because of that? No. The way that I put the stories into context changed. So now it's 148 pages. It's into its ninth printing. I've sold copies all over the world. It's not a Pulitzer Prize winner, but what I learned is it's not about me. That was the biggest nugget of knowledge ever. It's not about me. And in Darlene's words, what's your point?
Right.
You've always got to have a point.
Let's put a little shout out for the book. What's the title, please?
Alvin's Laws of Life.
Alvin's Laws of Life. We'll put a link to that on the website. Yeah. And your website?
Alvinlaw.com.
Alvinlaw.com. We'll put that on the website as well.
Thank you.
I know a lot of people would really, really, really love to have a Darlene. So we have a podcast actually that I recorded on how to find an agent. So if anybody's interested in that, we'll put a link to that in there as well. But talk about where you guys are going next in your business. So what I've loved is following you is when you bought the cottage and you started, I mean, you went from really, really road warrior to, okay, we've got to get some balance in our lives here. So talk about that a little bit.
That was really part of what was going on to my benefit was with Darlene being the boss. And she had actually a human resources background.
Yeah.
It wasn't that she was missing me. People need to know this. It was like someday she'd go, shouldn't you be going somewhere? Because we work out of our home together, right?
How can I miss you if you don't go away?
I think you dialed in a very important element, Jane, as you always seem to do. I don't want to make people uncomfortable with this because this is a touchy issue. But I've seen it over and over and over again of a couple, let's just say whatever couple looks like, mm-hmm. where the speaker is the star and the other person resents them or isn't in with the program or doesn't necessarily agree with the concept. I don't think it's common, let's just say, but it does exist.
Right.
Now, I'm not a Dr. Phil or anything, but I can't give you advice on that. But I think what was very fortunate was I learned how to dial back the road. Mm. And yes, we did buy a cottage in Saskatchewan. It's stupid. It's 11 hours away. But I'll tell you, when you drive that 11 hours, you promise your better half, in this case, I'm going to pay some attention, not only to you, this is important, but to me. Mm. You've got to have me time. You got to have, because I don't know about you, Jane, but you're always giving of yourself out there, you know, on the road, as you said, and in my case, I'm always giving. It's just, I give to the person behind the counter checking me into a hotel mm-hmm. because, you know, I met a guy in England last year when I checked in, he was just cranky. And I'm like, what's bugging you? He goes, do you have any idea the way people treat the front desk clerk at a hotel like this? I went, why would I? I don't have your job. And he looked at me and he said, what do you do? Before you know it, I'm talking about my life. I'm talking about my work. I had a colleague checking in a half an hour later who knew this guy. We had dinner tonight. He goes, what did you do to the front desk guy? I said, what do you mean?
Attitude adjustment.
And he says, he's never in a good mood. He says, I met your colleague from Canada. Oh my God. He says, I'm never going to complain again. We need to also live in that world ourselves.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't have to be a cottage, Jane. It can be a hike in the forest. It can be a show. It can be
walk
dinner.
Walk around the block. Yeah.
We got to spoil ourselves because we got to live the message that we're giving our audiences.
Yeah. Reconnect with ourselves, reconnect with our partners, because this is parts of the life of the wealthy speaker are glamorous, but then there are a lot of parts that are not so much. Alvin, you have, I think the thing that we'll be leaving people here is just perspective. perspective people, you know, and I know you haven't talked a lot about kind of the hardships and what your life day to day is like, but the fact that you wake up every morning feeling grateful, I think that that's just a beautiful message to give to people. And those of you who have two arms and are going through security at the airport, I really do hope that you'll think about Alvin the next time that happens. If you had one piece of advice to leave with folks, what would that be?
So I've got a little formula that somebody told me Jack Canfield came up with, and I've never been able to find it in Jack Canfield's books. But what I figured out in one of my trips with some executive CEOs type was a guy in England gave me this formula. And it is simply E plus or minus R equals O. So your audience can definitely write this down. E plus or minus R equals O.
Okay.
The E is for the event. Mm-hmm. Plus or minus is a positive or negative reaction, mm-hmm. and the O stands for outcome. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, if you follow that formula, even if you're just going through security or dealing with a blizzard, and you monitor your reaction,
right.
because this goes to science, Jane. You know this. This goes to science. Mm-hmm. Our energy levels shift when we're in negative energy mode, and it reflects on the people around us. It's like this wave you can't see. And that's why I believe it works, because not only am I changing the moment with people because their first reaction is, oh my God, and then they feel the positive energy, they think, what's that all about? E
right.
plus or minus R equals O. You just choose in the moment. Now, having said that, people need to also develop their own formula. Whatever
sure.
works, something in your head that reminds you every day, yeah, I have a lot to be thankful for. And that sounds pretty preachy. But boy, it sure works for me.
That's a beautiful place to leave it. And I want to say thank you. I'm not sure if Darlene's in the room with you, but thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Alvin. I have so much enjoyed our podcast together today and all of the time that I spend with you, Alvin, is always so much fun. For those of you who are listening in, I'll say thank you, Alvin, for being here. Give you a chance to say goodbye to
us. Thank you, Jane. You know, and I know you're going to be like all red faced and embarrassed, but people, Jane Atkinson changed my life. She really, really did.
Oh,
thank you, Jane.
That's sweet. Well, that's a good place to leave it, Wealthy Speakers. If you've enjoyed our podcast, make sure that you subscribe so you don't miss anything down the road. And with that, we will say, see you soon, Wealthy Speakers. Bye for now. Hey, thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed our show, you'll want to come and visit us at the Wealthy Speaker School, where we provide a proven roadmap for building your dream business. Go to wealthyspeakerschool.com. And for show notes for today's podcast, head on over to speakerlauncher.com and click on podcast. I'll see you soon, Wealthy Speakers.